Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In honor of World Oceans Day on Thursday, we're talking about one of the most important inhabitants of our oceans, coral reefs. Coral reefs are the nursery for all life in the oceans, a remarkable ecosystem that sustains us. And yet they are vanishing at an unprecedented rate. With carbon emissions warming the seas, a phenomenon called coral bleaching has been accelerating around the globe. And most people have no idea what's silently happening underwater. In the new documentary, Chasing Coral, a team of divers, photographers, and scientists set out on a thrilling ocean adventure to discover why coral reefs are dying. Using time-lapse cameras, they record these bleachings to show the world what is silently happening. Joining us today to talk about Chasing Coral and coral reefs are two guests. Zachary Rago is featured in the film Chasing Coral. He is a reef aquarist and longtime scuba diver. Zach is dedicated to communicating the story of coral through science and art, particularly to young people. And Zachary joins us here in studio. Hi, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I loved the film. And the film is going to be screening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lark Theater in Larkspur. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org, and Zach will be at tonight's screening. We're also joined today by Ruth Gates. Ruth was a scientific advisor for the film Chasing Coral, and she's director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa and the elected president of the International Society for Reef Studies. Ruth leads a globally recognized research group that focuses on corals and coral reef health. She won the Paul Allen International Ocean Challenge with her idea to develop corals that would survive climate change. And she joins us on the line from Hawaii. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose. I'm very happy to be with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have both of you. This is such an important topic. Ruth, I want to start off with you. Only about 1% of the population has ever been underwater. Most people have never seen the beauty of coral reefs. Why don't we start off by doing a brief Coral Reef 101 and tell us why they are so important.
Absolutely. So coral reefs are—they're one of these pivotal ecosystems in the ocean. You know, first of all, I mean, people ask me all the time, why are they important? Well, first, they are a place where many other things live. They are really, really—they're like underwater cities, and so they house many other species, and many of those species end up on our plates. So they're critical for food security. Secondly, corals, as these tiny little ancient animals, have this ability to lay down a bone-like structure that creates these huge dimensional places that can be seen from space. And this structure, the skeleton of the reef itself, is really important in terms of diminishing wave energy coming onto land. And so they are really natural seawalls, and they protect the land behind them. They also serve as a place for tourism. Obviously, in Hawaii, it's the economic driver for the state. And so without your reef, you have a much diminished tourist industry. Mm-hmm. We get many drugs from the sea. So, and from the coral reef specifically, there are medications that we use to treat diseases like cancer and AIDS that come directly from the reef. So these are sort of really extremely important to human health. I mean, they are fundamental to how healthy we are as a species.
Zach, what would you add?
You know, there are about 500 million people to 1 billion people that rely on this directly. And if we continue on the same path, those people are not going to have a food source. They're not going to have a source of income anymore. And those things can be a really frightening statement when we think about the potential future of coral reefs. So it's the direct impacts to humans, as Ruth said, with tourism, but also for just the longevity and the stability of people's lives in some of these places that have complete reliance on these ecosystems. That's a really frightening statement to think about, considering the direction coral reefs are headed right now.
Why don't we start off on a positive note before we talk about what's happening to the coral reefs? Talk about what a healthy coral ecosystem looks like. Zach, your passion with coral reefs began while spending summers in Hawaii. You've done a lot of diving and snorkeling in Hawaii.
Yeah. You know, a coral reef, for me, it was my great escape as a kid. So a healthy coral reef system is just this immense, bustling, lively area where there's no shortage of diversity. There, everywhere you look, something new, something different. They're competing for space. They're competing for light. And it's truly the most diverse and beautiful and structurally aesthetic place on the planet. And that's what's drawn me in since a young age, and to see them, you know, kind of fall apart as it's happening right now, and as you could see in the film, is pretty hard to watch, especially for someone that's cultivated that relationship like so many of our scientists have. But when they're healthy, there's no place on the planet that's as beautiful and as just euphoric to be in.
Ruth, what would you add? How do you describe a healthy coral ecosystem?
Well, you know, I'm a very visual person, so I always describe coral reefs as these very colorful places. You know, the sort of the city itself is really, the health of it is diagnosed for me by the number of colors that you see fleeting or flipping in and out of the image. And, you know, hundreds of colorful fish are all different, you know, the colors of the rainbow. And so that for me is sort of a really easy, simple way to think about these places as health is diagnosed by color.
And I like to spend time in Puako on the Big Island, and what's amazing is there's, from the, on a hike, for example, you'd never know that there's so much life. Just if you jump right in immediately, you see so many different species of fish. If you're lucky, you'll see a massive manta ray, maybe an octopus. I mean, there's just so much life underwater. Ruth, because so few people have actually spent time underwater, how do you get the larger population to really care about this issue?
Well, you know, I mean, my whole career was influenced by Jacques Cousteau. You know, I mean, that was a great example of a sort of a television show that exposed a completely new audience to the mysteries and wonders of the underwater world. And I think that, you know, what's happening right now is we have this incredible capacity to reach people with imagery, and the imagery can be collected using so much very interesting technology that we can expose people in a variety of ways that really sort of hit them where they live. And that's, I mean, that's ultimately what you're trying to do, is to really tweak someone's emotions to care about the system that they may have no knowledge about. And, you know, this film, Chasing Coral, is a great example of that.
Zach, you do a lot of work with young people to try to get the next generations interested and informed about this issue.
Yeah, one of the funnest part through this entire journey has been, originally when we started, Richard Vivers, who's also subject in the film, you know, had all of this 360 imagery from underwater that was being utilized for scientific purposes. And, you know, we kind of went back to the drawing board and said, hey, like, this can be utilized in a variety of different assets, and in particular, bringing it on to Google Expeditions and being able to take virtual dives with students all over the country. And I've had the awesome opportunity to do that, and, you know, it never gets old to see kids just light up when you know, up in Colorado where I'm from, and some of these kids may never get the opportunity to get to the ocean, and you can spend a couple hours with them and take them to the most spectacular reef in the world and just let them explore and let them find their own curiosities. And it is the most rewarding part of all of this, is allowing the kids to see the beauty, but also chat about the bad things that are happening. And
yeah,
it's been awesome. It, for the kids, there is nothing more powerful than these virtual reality tools that are being developed right now. And I think that's the forefront of education.
And if you have kids, you might want to take them, if you're free tonight, to the screening of Chasing Coral. You definitely want to see this on the big screen, because the images are just incredible, also haunting, especially when you see the coral bleaching happening almost in real time. And Chasing Coral is screening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lark Theater in Larkspur. Ruth Gates was a scientific advisor for the film Chasing Coral. She's director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And Zach Rago is featured in the film. He's a reef aquarist and longtime scuba diver, and he's dedicated to communicating the story of coral through science and art, particularly to young people. Zach, you don't hear this every day. What's a reef aquarist?
So an aquarist is a fun word just for people that are within the aquarium hobby. So at a young age, about 13 years old, I started caring for corals up in Colorado and had a variety of basically tanks of marine tropical fish as well as mostly coral. So I made a career out of that through my high school and college days, and it taught me a lot. It's basically how I got involved with this. I had really my own kind of hands-on laboratory to myself with a variety of different coral species, and kind of led me on this path that I never turned back from. And here we are now, you know, making a movie about something that I care so dearly about, which is the corals. And it's a pretty awesome hobby. So, you know, if you have kids that are interested in the coral world, you know, start a little tank. You know, get some Nemos and put them together in your house, and it actually can teach you a lot. It's an amazing learning experience to be a participant in that hobby, and I think it does a lot of good. But it has its dark sides as well.
Right. I was going to say, are you advocating people buying Nemos?
So Nemos are an interesting one.
Oh, the Nemos are interesting. It's the dories,
right?
That you don't want people to buy.
Nemos were actually really good at breeding in captivity. But I'm a person that actually doesn't do fish in my aquariums because of some of the dark sides. Mm-hmm. So there's pros and cons to it, but I do think that in the long term that they can do a lot of good because we learn a lot in a closed system. But it's all about being smart and doing it the right way.
Yeah, and there's so much information online. If you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about coral reefs, what is happening to them as a result of climate change, we'd love to hear from you. If you are a diver or a snorkeler, we'd love to hear about the changes that you have seen over the years. The one thing I love to do when I go to Hawaii is just informally interview fishermen, and they say things have drastically changed. 10, 15 years ago, they would find large fish. It wouldn't take them very long to bring enough home to feed their families. And now it takes all day, sometimes a couple days, and they're not finding what they used to find in 10 or 15 years ago. So if you've spent time underwater, we'd love to hear from you. If you are involved in any type of coral preservation projects, give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Ruth, there has been so much work done on climate change. What is the science telling us now about how climate change is affecting coral reefs?
Well, the science is very clear. The ocean is warming, and the temperatures that are now occurring in the summers are really overwhelming the natural system. It's above the thermal threshold for the corals themselves. So they don't like hot water, and they don't like super cold water. And when they're stressed by warm water, they do this thing called bleaching, where they lose their normally dark brown or green coloration and turn bone white. And that's the phenomenon that's sort of the centerpiece of the coral, Chasing Coral film. You know, we've been studying this since the mid-1980s. And, you know, we've seen very large bleaching events in the past in 1998. But what's happening is the number of bleaching events that are happening in a given period of time is increasing, that as the temperatures of the planet are rising. And, you know, this alarming research that is suggesting that, you know, bleaching will become an annual issue for coral reefs in the not-too-distant future. And this leads the community to sort of predict that the majority of coral reefs will be dead by 2050.
By 2050?
Yes.
There are so many amazing scenes in Chasing Coral, and you all got your hands on these very high-tech cameras, and you would dive down and you try to bolt them on the ocean floor to try to get footage, and in some cases, it just didn't work. And so you went through the old-fashioned way of grabbing photos by diving down and taking pictures. And Zach, you were involved in an incredible experiment. It was about 30 days, I believe, in the Great...
In the Great Barrier Reef, it was about 150 days
150
total.
You went down every day for 150 days.
Essentially, yes.
Okay, so
for the time lapses that you see, it's about 55 days over the span of a bleaching event that happened in the northern Great Barrier Reef. So we spent a lot of time developing the technology with the camera company that I work for in Boulder, Colorado, called View Into the Blue, to design a system that could do this autonomously, kind of remove the human element and just get the job done. And for a variety of reasons, whether the cameras didn't work the first round in the Northern Hemisphere or we were just simply in the wrong place at the wrong time, we had to drop everything and do this by hand. And it was an amazing experience, but you also have that human emotional ties to these things. And for all of us who have cared so deeply about this project, which was really a labor of love and trying to share our passions with the world, to have to be down there ourselves and actually witness these events while we took these images was extremely difficult. You're really watching an entire ecosystem collapse in front of your eyes, and it was really emotional. Like, we had really hard days, really bad days, but at the end of it all, you got to keep in mind that this story is bigger than yourself. Any personal gripes that you may have with the issue, you're trying to share this story with the world and open people's eyes to something that they might not have the opportunity to know about or to see. And seeing is truly believing.
You went down every day and you made sure that the photo you took was the exact same photo you took the day before. And underwater, that's extremely difficult.
Yeah, we designed a pretty elaborate way of achieving that. So we actually had like laser beams on our cameras that we would put markers in the ocean floor and actually be able to position ourselves back into three-dimensional space. And then we also had laminations of our first day's shot, so I could make comparisons and get it as close as possible. And it's extremely difficult underwater. The ocean's always throwing you curveballs. You have days where you're just getting rocked around by the currents. You have days that are not good visibility. So it's all about manipulating yourself and manipulating the system to work out to the best of your abilities and try and capture the best image. So not easy, extremely complicated, but we did manage to get it done. And it took a lot of work, a lot of on-the-spot thinking in the field, a lot of adaptation, and We did our very best to capture something that we were so keen on getting.
What was it like for you when you realized that you were seeing a bleaching happening in real time?
Yeah, so one of the most interesting things of this film is when we started this project, we were really keen on visualizing healthy coral reef bleaching. We never actually had a conversation about witnessing mortality or trying to capture an event on the scale of where we ended up. So when we ended up in the Great Barrier Reef and had this kind of realization moment that, wow, this event is getting much larger than we ever expected and the scale of this is bigger than we had ever imagined, that was really hard, because then you start to realize these things are going to die. This is no longer just a normal bleaching event. This is going to be one of the largest mortality events in history for coral reefs. And to be on that front line was something that I never expected and was probably not prepared to cope with emotionally. So that was really tough. But I'm thankful that we had a team there to be able to capture this, because otherwise these things could have just happened and no one might not know about it.
Ruth, what was your reaction when you saw this specific footage?
You know, I was pretty horrified, to be honest. It made me feel, emotionally incredibly depressed, but it sort of made me ponder the fact that we rarely actually visualize anything dying before our eyes. Mm-hmm. And so in this film, you actually watch the corals die, and that is gut-wrenching for anybody who has a passion for the system, and really I think for anybody who is connected in any way to nature, because it is sort of a sentinel of things that are happening in other places as well. It's a very it's a very obvious thing that we were able to capture on film, but you know, we see the death of the forest. We see all kinds of things happening that sort of tell us that we're pushing our planet and all organisms that live on it very close to their ability to survive. And so, you know, this film was just, it was very heartbreaking for me, because I studied the reef for, you know, over 30 years and spent an extraordinary amount of time on it.
Ruth Gates was a scientific advisor for the new documentary Chasing Coral. She's director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And Zach Rago is featured in the film. He is a reef aquarist and longtime scuba diver. Chasing Coral is presented by the International Ocean Film Fest in honor of World Oceans Day. The film is screening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lark Theater in Larkspur, and Zach will be there for a Q&A. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Tim in San Francisco. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
See the film at the International Film Festival.
Hi, Tim. Sorry, can you start over? We got you late there.
Oh, I was just delighted to see this film at the International, and wanted to thank them. It's such a fine balancing act between the wrenching beauty and the wrenching destruction. So it's a good thing that you walked the line. The one thing I would say, maybe to help especially Americans make some kind of connection, is to put a stronger emphasis on we need this for food. Make that connection stronger, that people get the connection between, you know, how we need the coral reefs if we like fish, to maybe get them more involved. It just, but anyway, beautifully done. And as we hurtle into the Anthropocene, is that what we're calling it now, where the planet changes because of us? But anyway, it just was a great thing to watch. It was moving. I got to say, Zach, I was tearing up watching you on those last few days on those dives. That really seemed like it must have been a tough job, but all for a worthwhile cause. And just if more people knew, and especially if they thought maybe we won't get to eat fish anymore, they might do more about it.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I'm really happy that the film has touched you in an emotional way. And I will say we have this entire impact campaign that we are doing alongside the film. And our ultimate goal is to get this film into the hands of those who need it the most and in places within the United States that might not have access to these knowledge. And for us, and your comment about the fish is, you know, really what I've found is when we're having these conversations, we have to start with value. If you start with value, you give facts a chance, and that's really important. And if we can approach it in that way, and especially through the sense of economics and their value, I think we can make a big difference. And I hope that our impact campaign, as we're just right now getting started, we're going to go out and we're going to try and utilize the power of this film while it's fresh and do as much good as we possibly can in America as well as in Australia. So thank you.
Ruth, what would you add?
Yes, I mean, I think that comp is spot on. And if you don't know why you should care, then you won't. And so I, trying to find people's values and hit them with messaging that really touches them, I think not everybody will respond to the same message. So trying to sort of think about the core messaging that we want to get across about coral reefs and how they serve humans or how they serve other functions that are important to humans, I think is one way to go. I mean, for me, it was just the intrinsic beauty of the system that stimulated my interest. I couldn't believe these cathedral-like structures existed under the ocean. So, you know, it's so important that we educate people. And you know, as a scientist, I can say that, you know, we study our systems and we think we're doing important work, but, you know, sometimes we fail to connect that work to the people at large. And when something, as is currently happening, happens, we then have to play catch up with trying to come back to the ABCs of why we should care about coral reefs. And this film helps us enormously in doing that. And I think it makes scientists step back a little bit from the detail and think, well, really, what should we be communicating about the system at this point? And the importance to fish, you know, 25% of all fish spend some time on a coral reef. Mm-hmm. And that's an extraordinary number. So spot on with that message, I think.
Thank you for calling in, Tim. That is Ruth Gates. She was a scientific advisor for the documentary Chasing Coral. Zach Rago is featured in the film, and he will be at tonight's event. Chasing Coral is screening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lark Theater in Larkspur. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. It's being presented by the International Ocean Film Festival in honor of World Oceans Day. And in the film, a team of divers, photographers, and scientists set out to find out why coral reefs are vanishing at an unprecedented rate. The footage is both beautiful and haunting. You can actually also see the trailer at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or you may leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with prison reform activist Susan Burton about her new book, Becoming Miss Burton. She writes about the death of her son, drug addiction, and why she cycled in and out of Los Angeles prisons. Today, she's running A New Way of Life. It's a nonprofit that helps women leaving prison re-enter society. We're also putting shows together about how single payer would work here in California. And we're going to talk with Uber and Lyft drivers about the ride-hailing industry. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the incredible documentary Chasing Coral. And it's a documentary looking at why coral reefs are vanishing at an unprecedented rate. And I really hope you can see it on the big screen because the footage is just stunning and also haunting, because at one point in the Great Barrier Reef, a small team got footage of a coral reef bleaching before their eyes. And if you're free tonight, you can see the film at the Lark Theater. It's at 7 o'clock. It's being presented by the International Ocean Film Festival in honor of World Oceans Day, which is this Thursday. Find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. Zach Rago will be at tonight's screening. He's featured in the film. He's a reef aquarist and a longtime scuba diver, and he's dedicated to communicating the story of coral through science and art, particularly to young people. We're also joined today by Ruth Gates. She was a scientific advisor for the film, and she's director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear next from Arian in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call, is it me?
Hi, yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I just want to make a few points. Coral reefs are like underwater forests. And they like our urban forests are facing incredible deforestation, which is accelerating catastrophic climate change. And I would like to hear more about coral reefs being more than just a symptom of recklessness and greed. I want us to move our dialogues about the environment to talk about how other species have different ways of knowing than us, and that they have a right to be that's independent of our needs as humans. And I'm hoping that in the near future, that in the San Francisco Bay Area, there would be a manifesto for the rights of nature, because I just feel like there's so many issues that need to be connected together, but otherwise we're isolated citizens fighting one battle after another, and we lack either the money or the time or the knowledge to be as efficacious as we need to be, considering how high the stakes are. Thank you so much, the filmmakers.
Yeah, it's a great comment. Thank you so much for that. Ruth, do you want to take that one first?
Yes, I mean, I think that that's spot on. You know, thinking of, you know, we often focus on a single species. So, you know, the giant panda. That's where we started with conservation. And now I think what we're moving towards is sort of this whole system approach of looking at an ecosystem like a coral reef as a place where, you know, thousands and thousands of species depend on coral reefs. And when coral reefs die, all of those species die. It's as simple as that. So this bigger picture of, you know, a place is really a venue for many different types of organisms to interact, and coral reefs are places where many things interact with one another. And you know, we tend to contextualize almost always by the connection to humans, but, you know, coral reefs and their importance to the other species other than humans, so interesting and really very profoundly important to think about.
Zach?
I totally agree with Ruth. I think when we start looking at these systems as something that is at play in a global view of our world, they impact everything, and it's not just the ocean. These things need protection, and they need to be viewed as a consortium of organisms that are playing an enormous function in the global ecosystem. And we're definitely moving towards that rather than thinking about the sharks or the pandas or the elephants. We're starting to think about this from an entire ecosystem perspective, which is one step forward. I think that's a huge move for the environmental space, and that's what we're going to start seeing going forward.
Thank you again, Arian. Great comment. We need to do a show about that. You make very good points. Let's go next to Andrea in Petaluma. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I live in the Caribbean part of the year in St. John, Virgin Islands.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, I know, very lucky. And I snorkel every day. So I have seen the effects of coral bleaching. But I've also seen some new growth coming in that area. I have a couple of questions. First, did you do any research, Zach or Ruth, have you looked at the coral in the Virgin Islands and the Caribbean? What kind of coral is regenerating? And finally, the really important issue is sunscreen, because we have a million tourists that come to the Virgin Islands, and they wear sunscreen, they go in the water, and I believe that is not good for the coral. So those are my questions and comments.
Okay, thank you so much. Ruth, do you want to take the question about sunscreen first?
Sure. I mean, you know, there are a myriad of things that are affecting coral reefs, and sunscreens are one of those things, particularly in places that are heavily visited by tourists and have slack water that doesn't flush very well. Definitely sunscreens are one pollutant, along with, you know, nutrients and lots of fertilizers coming off golf courses and sediments being washed into the coral reef system with rainwater. I mean, there are so many insults on modern coral reefs today. So, sunscreens are very important, and we it's something we can control very, very easily, and we should.
What about Andrea's question about what's happening in the Virgin Islands?
So I've actually done a little bit of work in the Virgin Islands. So through my nonprofit, I have a couple of live webcams through the same technology we used in the movie. And I actually agree with Andrea. We've actually seen a decent amount of growth in the Virgin Islands. There are still some amazingly beautiful reefs around the world. So not every location is going to see the direct impacts on a yearly basis from a bleaching event. They can be fairly sporadic or even variable. And some of these areas, especially in the Caribbean, have kind of missed the bullseye over the past few years. Certainly some of them have bleached, but a lot of these events were really heavy in Hawaii, in the Southern Pacific, and in Australia, and even in the Indian Ocean. But it seems that the Caribbean, as it has its own issues that are facing Caribbean corals. The bleaching in, you know, 2014 to 2016 wasn't as bad as it could have been in the Caribbean. And I don't know if Ruth has something else to say about that, but definitely from the views that I've had from the cameras we have in the Caribbean, they kind of dodged a bullet.
Ruth?
Yeah, so, I will say that, you know, St. John, Lamasha Bay in St. John is a long-term survey site for a project that's run out of the National Science Foundation. And so, you know, we've been watching corals down there for a very long time. And I would say that the Caribbean reefs took a really big hit much earlier than the Pacific reefs. And that was as a result of a sort of a perfect storm of a bleaching event followed by a disease that wiped out all of the things that eat the plants that live on reefs. And so the plants took over the coral reef. And it was just a perfect storm. And so the recovery that we're seeing now is really, it's heartening to see. The recovery of coral reefs really depends on there being conditions for a long enough period of time that allow corals to recover. And what's really worrying scientists right now is the fact that the conditions that allow corals to recover are getting shorter and shorter and shorter.
Hmm.
And so even though corals try to recover, that they keep getting hit back, and that being sort of pruned back is happening much more frequently now than ever before.
Can you spend some more time talking about this? Because we often hear that the corals can recover. What are we learning about that?
Well, you know, corals, you know, they've been on the planet for over 200 million years. Let's face it, these are organisms that have really sort of got it right for an extended period of time. I think that what we're really seeing, they can reproduce very effectively for a long period of time. But what happens is, if they bleach, there tends to be a lag. They put all of their energy into trying to grow back. If they survive a bleaching event, they'll try and grow, and they won't reproduce. And so there's often a 1 or 2 year lag before they start putting out babies that are really needed to really recruit to make new reef. So really, it's a race against time. If there's not sufficient time for coral reefs to reproduce between bleaching events, then you gradually just get the death of more and more corals and no new ones coming in. And there are a number of places around the world where that's happening, that there's just not enough reef to produce new reef.
What happens after a coral is bleached?
Yeah, so there's two things that can happen. A bleached coral will either die or recover, and it will die if the conditions that are causing it to be very stressed out and bleached continue beyond the point where it can survive. You know, what will happen sometimes in the middle of a bleaching event is that the conditions in that area will change very suddenly, and the water will cool. Maybe a storm will come through. And in those cases, the corals that are bleached that are still surviving will often recover completely and carry on. And that's, you know, that's what the optimum situation is, to be able to detect bleaching early enough and then to think about how to create conditions that allow those corals that are bleaching to survive rather than die.
Wow. You're working to breed corals that are completely resistant to bleaching. Can you talk about that, and how does that work?
Yes. I mean, what we're trying to do is, you know, what the science is telling us is the rates of change in the environment are outpacing the ability of the coral reefs to survive. So what we're trying to do is to accelerate what nature does to keep up with the rates of change in the environment. And what we mean by that is in vitro fertilization, taking the corals that seem to be surviving conditions that are killing others and breeding them. You know, this is an approach that's been taken in conservation biology to protect a lot of species. And, you know, we're just at the beginning of this kind of work, but it really requires that you emotionally get over this hurdle of thinking that if we just step back and leave the system will be fine.
Hmm.
You know, it doesn't seem to be fine at the moment, and that's, it's kind of scary, I think, for scientists like myself. I would never have imagined I would be doing this work.
Ruth, I'm so glad you brought up that word emotion, because last week was a very difficult week for people who have dedicated their lives to conservation, with Donald Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. I mean, the last 4 or 5 months have been incredibly difficult, with Scott Pruitt running the EPA and the oil and gas industry just having an open door to the White House. I mean, people who work on these issues have already been seeing so many disasters, and now we have this. So how are you dealing with that? And what would you say to other conservationists?
Look, you know, we just have to carry on. We just have to use this to incentivize ourselves to be more assertive about what we're doing. It's very easy to be derailed, I think. by the context in which you work. But I think that most scientists and most people know that to do things and do them well, you have to be persistent and often hit hurdles that were unexpected. And I mean, I am so fundamentally disappointed by the fact that we are not going to lead the world in emission reduction, but the rest of the world is picking up the slack. And so, you know, in many ways, it's a time to reflect on the fact that many, 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 many countries in the world have committed to this very, very progressive future. And I think America will go there regardless of this sort of announcement. So I try not to get sort of caught up in the weeds and let that sort of derail the science that we're doing, because if anything, it's just telling us we need to do it more effectively and more efficiently, that the conditions aren't quite as enabling, but we need to carry on.
What would you add, Zach, as a young person who works with kids to educate them and get them interested in these issues?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for sure, and I was obviously pretty upset last week when this got announced. But what we've seen over the past few days is not only are other nations around the world that are part of this agreement picking up the slack for us, but we're also seeing people within the United States, governors, mayors, organizations, individuals that are stepping up and ensuring that we can do the most that we possibly can to continue what we were planning on doing in this agreement. And that's given me a lot of hope as well. It's there's a silver lining to everything. And what I see this as is there's a newfound sense of urgency and enthusiasm for the scientific community and the conservation community, activism, to work harder than ever. And that might be something that we actually needed. While it's surely disappointing that we're not going to be leading the world in this asset and over the next few years in the greenifying our cities and greenifying the world, we will surely do our best and not be derailed by this. I'm with Ruth 100%. I think there's still a lot of good, and I think that this is just going to push us farther into that space, and there's going to be some good that comes from this.
Zach Rago is a reef aquarist and longtime scuba diver. He is featured in the documentary Chasing Coral, and he will be at tonight's screening at 7 o'clock at the Lark Theater in Larkspur. It is presented by the International Ocean Film Fest in honor of World Oceans Day, and you can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Ruth Gates. She was a scientific advisor for Chasing Coral. She's director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Joni Mitchell in Oakland. Hi, Joni. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am a first-time caller.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I sailed across the Indian Ocean in a very small boat in 1971 and saw the greatest of the coral at that time. And last month, my daughter and I were on a liveaboard out of Cairns for a few days, and I saw it again. And, of course, I saw the changes that had happened. And but the reason that I called was that the crew of the boat, and there's lots of these boats going out on the reef every day out of Cairns, that the crew did not take advantage of the opportunity of the young captive audience on the boat to educate these young people about the situation. And I was wondering whether the makers of this film were reaching out to that particular community. Also the same in Bali, where I go every year to do my work, and there's so many people who see the reef there. And it seems like those two places where people actually are going out onto the reef, such a good opportunity for education. So I'm wondering if a film might be seen in either of those situations. Thanks.
Thank you. Zach?
Yeah, the tourism industry is an interesting one. It's almost a great irony of this entire story is that particularly in places like Cairns, we see two sides to this. It's people need to understand that this is about 6 million jobs in Australia that are done with the tourism industry just by the Great Barrier Reef. And can we go out and say, oh, well, the reef is dying? They believe that's bad for tourism. Nobody wants to go see a dying reef. And so they're scared of that. So there's two ideals here. It's do you milk the system and get what you can out of it while it's still there? Or do you have all of these people that make a livelihood off of the reef support endeavors to save this area and actually ensure the longevity of an industry. And it's a really fine line, and it's a very fragile thing to talk about, especially in Australia, because it means so much to local economies. Mm-hmm. And I think divers need to go see the beauty, and they need to go out and create that relationship, but they also need to see what the reality of what's happening underwater. So my ideal situation is to have those people go out, spend the money, and go see the amazing reefs that still exist. But, you know, take one dive and go see what can happen, and talk about the education. I think there's a balancing act that needs to happen in that world and with the diving community. And there are so many institutions like Reef Check, and people are doing a lot of good with citizen science and with the diving. But there's definitely changes that need to be made and some progress that needs to be made in order to ensure that that industry and these amazing places survive. Hmm.
Ruth, you're in Hawaii. What does this look like there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the tourist industry, you know, and the hospitality industry, they're very, you know, unaware, really, as many other people are, of the trajectory of reefs. And so I think it's been made very sort of apparent on the Great Barrier Reef, but elsewhere I think is less apparent. And it's an untapped opportunity for us to collaborate with the diving industry and the hospitality industry in protecting reefs and educating about them. But also, some of these diving professionals have more information about specific reefs than the scientists from that place. Hmm. I mean, they are people who are deeply embedded in the ecosystem, and I think there's an opportunity to sort of really get knowledge out of that community as well and engage in this much more equal dialogue about what's going on our reefs and what can we do about it collaboratively. You know, let's get together on the issue and let's not see ourselves as sort of different compartments who don't interact. So, you know, I think that that this is a general conversation about broadening the sphere of actors in the room around coral conservation and understanding what's going on reefs across much bigger spatial scales across many different places, because we don't have scientists in all those places. Mm.
And this film will be shown broadly because Netflix bought it, and so it's going to be on Netflix in the next few months?
Yep. We have not publicly announced it, but it's going to be released on July 14th.
July 14th. Yeah. Okay, great. So you can see it on July 14th, and maybe we'll do a follow-up show because this is so important. We have an email from Amy who says, over the last several years, I've read that ocean acidification will kill off most sea life by 2035. What do you think about that, Ruth?
Yes, I mean, ocean acidification is sort of the other problem on reefs that is related to temperature. What we're seeing on coral reefs is actually that the temperature rise seems to be more imminently threatening than ocean acidification, but ocean acidification is compounding or making worse the circumstance for corals, because this chemistry shift in the ocean that really just reflects carbon dioxide dissolving in the water and making the waters more acidic, it really inhibits the ability of the corals to lay down this critical skeleton that is the structure that forms the home for all these other organisms. So, you know, it is the ugly stepchild of warming, and is a very threatening issue to all systems that have to rely on a skeleton. And, you know, you can think about the shellfish industry in the same way, also badly influenced by chemistry that just stops the shellfish from laying down their shells. Mm.
This issue is getting so much more attention. I mean, even if you do not spend much time underwater, there are daily headlines about what's happening. The Guardian had a story last week about how things are so bad in the Great Barrier Reef that the World Heritage Site might be, or the words danger might be added to that. So it might be a World Heritage Site in danger. And this is brand new, but things are so bad that they're thinking about adding those words. So as this is getting more attention, and as chasing coral is seen hopefully by a lot of people, Zach, what would you say is the most effective thing people can do at this point?
I'm a huge proponent of thinking about things backwards a little bit. I think for too long we've put the cart before the horse, and for decades now we've been thinking about just sacrifice, telling people what not to do and how to change their lives, and if anything that can become a deterrent. Mm-hmm. And moving forward, what we have to do is attack this ideologically, and we have to throw a better party. We have to make these changes and these so-called sacrifices no longer become a sacrifice. We have to make these both economically viable for people to do and also for them to believe that it isn't a huge change in their life. Driving a Tesla is much more fun than driving an Accord. We have to be making these simple steps and changing people's thoughts about why should I make these changes, not only because it benefits the planet, but also because it's more enjoyable for you, whether it's economic, whether it's psychological. We have to fundamentally change the way we view this and really kind of take a step back from the sacrifice. If you can sacrifice and you want to, good on you. You're going to make a huge impact. But I don't think that's the direct approach that we have to take anymore.
Mm. Ruth, what do you think?
Yes. I mean, I think that the one message that's coming out very clearly is we have to act now. We don't have time to plan to act. We just have to begin. And, you know, beginning with something that makes sense for any individual is where one begins. And you can do what you can do, and your sphere of influence will reflect, you know, where you are and how you operate. So, you know, if you decide to stop using plastic bags, that's a huge, great thing that you've done. So it's not this sort of prescribed route. We just need to start changing the way that we do business. And we also have to recognize that humans are just one species. And if we've got problems with reefs now, I can guarantee you we're going to be having problems with humans in the not-too-distant future. We tend to disconnect ourselves from the things that are happening with nature, but we're a part of nature, and we will be influenced by the changes on the planet in a very negative way directly soon. So we should change for the ecosystems, but we should also change for our future, too.
As a scientist who's dedicated your life to this issue, the next 4 years, we're not going to see much movement from the federal government to making this issue better, but we are going to see movement at the state and local levels. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think the really amazing thing about, you know, having a somewhat difficult political circumstance is that you see actors come to the table who haven't been present before. And, you know, the philanthropy community is bringing a huge amount to the table now that perhaps haven't in the past. And so there are so many places where action is occurring regardless. There's this collective energy of we can make a difference, and we're just going to. And that's a great feeling, to be sort of in the midst of this very positive energy. I mean, humans can do anything when they set their mind to it. I mean, look, we've almost closed the ozone hole. I mean, that's amazing collective action on a planetary scale, and we can do the same with CO2 mitigation. We can do the same with reducing fossil fuel burning, because ultimately that is the one action that we all do collectively that will change the future for coral reefs. It will prevent the complete eradication of the system.
Ruth Gates is director of the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. She was a scientific advisor for the documentary Chasing Coral, which sets out to discover why coral reefs are vanishing at an unprecedented rate. Zach Rago is featured in the film. He's a reef aquarist and longtime scuba diver, and he will be at tonight's screening, 7 o'clock, at the Lark Theater in Larkspur. It's presented by the International Ocean Film Festival in honor of World Oceans Day. And you can look at the trailer at yourcallradio.org and learn more about the importance of coral reefs. Zach and Ruth, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, yes, Ruth.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Coming up tomorrow, prison reform activist Susan Burton will join us to talk about her new book, Becoming Miss Burton. She writes about the death of her son, drug addiction, and why she cycled in and out of Los Angeles prisons. Today, she runs A New Way of Life, a nonprofit that helps women leaving prison re-enter society. I hope you can join us for that conversation. Thanks to Ellie Budner for producing today's show. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.